Taita rose to his feet in a single lithe motion. Despite his great age, he moved like a young man. His agility and resilience never ceased to amaze Merrin, even after all the years he had spent at his side. Taita picked up his staff from the corner of the terrace and leant lightly on it as he paused at the bottom of the stairs to look up at the high tower. The villagers had built it for him. Every family in Galala had taken part in the labour. It was a tangible sign of the love and reverence they felt for the old Magus, who had opened the sweet water spring that nourished the town, who protected them with the invisible but potent power of his magic. Taita started up the circular staircase that wound up the outside of the tower. The treads were narrow and open to the drop, unprotected by a balustrade. He went up like an ibex, not watching his feet, the tip of his staff tapping lightly on the stones. When he reached the platform on the summit, he settled on the silken prayer rug, facing east. Merrin placed a silver flask beside him, then took his place behind him, close enough to respond swiftly if Taita needed him, but not so close that he would intrude on the Magus's concentration. Taita removed the horn stopper from the flask and took a mouthful of the sharply bitter fluid. He swallowed it slowly, feeling the warmth spreading from his belly through every muscle and nerve in his body, flooding his mind with a crystalline radiance. He sighed softly and allowed the inner eye of his soul to open under its balmy influence. Two nights previously, the old moon had been swallowed by the monster of night, and now the sky belonged only to the stars. Taita watched as they began to appear in order of their ranking, the brightest and most powerful leading the train. Soon they thronged the heavens in teeming multitudes, bathing the desert with a silvery luminance. Taita had studied them all his life. He had thought he knew all that there was to know and understand of them, but now, through his inner eye, he was developing a new understanding of the qualities and position of each in the eternal scheme of matter, and in the affairs of men and gods. There was one bright, particular star that he sought out eagerly. He knew it was nearest of all to where he sat. As soon as he saw it, all his senses were exalted. That evening it seemed to hang directly above the tower. The star had first appeared in the sky exactly 90 days after the mummification of Queen Lostris, on the night he had sealed her into her tomb. Its appearance had been miraculous. Before she died, she had promised him that she would return to him, and he felt a deep conviction that the star was the fulfilment of her oath. She had never left him. For all these years her Nova had been his lodestar. When he looked up at it, the desolation that had dominated his soul since her death was alleviated. Now when he gazed at it with his inner eye, he saw that Lostris's star was surrounded by her aura. Although it was diminutive when compared to some of the astral colossi, no other body in the heavens could match its splendour. Taita felt his love for Lostris burn steadily, undiminished, warming his soul. Suddenly his whole body stiffened with alarm, and a coldness spread through his veins towards his heart. "Magus!" Merrin had sensed his change of mood. "What ails you?" He clasped Taita's shoulder, his other hand on the hilt of his sword. Unable to speak in his distress, Taita shrugged him away and continued to stare upwards. In the interval since he had last laid eyes upon it, Lostris's star had swollen to several times its normal size. Its once bright and constant aura had become intermittent, the emanations fluttering as disconsolately as the torn pennant of a defeated army. Its body was distorted, bulging at each end and narrowing in the centre. Even Merrin noticed the change. "Your star! Something has happened to it. What does this mean?" He knew how important it was to Taita. "I cannot yet say," Taita whispered. "Leave me here, Merrin. Go to your sleeping mat. I must have no distraction. Come for me at dawn." Taita kept watch until the star faded with the approach of the sun. But by the time Merrin returned to lead him down from the tower, he knew that Lostris's star was moribund. Though he was exhausted from his long night's vigil, he could not sleep. The image of the dying star filled his mind, and he was harried by dark, formless forebodings. This was the last and most awful manifestation of evil. First they had been the plagues that killed man and beast, and now this terrible malignancy which destroyed the stars. The following night Taita did not return to the tower, but went alone into the desert seeking solace. Although Merin had been instructed not to follow his master, he did so at a distance. Of course, Taita sensed his presence and confounded him by cloaking himself in a spell of concealment. Angry and worried for his master's safety, Merin searched for him all night. At sunrise, when he hurried back to Galala to raise a search party, he found Taita sitting alone on the terrace of the old temple. "You disappoint me, Merin. It is unlike you to wander away and neglect your duties," Taita chided him. "Now, do you propose to starve me? Summon the new maidservant you have employed, and let us hope her cooking is not eclipsed by her pretty face." He did not sleep during that day, but sat alone in the shade at the far end of the terrace. As soon as they had eaten the evening meal, he climbed to the top of the tower once more. The sun was only a finger below the horizon, but he was determined not to waste a moment of the hours of darkness when the star would be revealed to him. Night came as swiftly and stealthily as a thief. Taita strained his eyes into the east. The stars pricked through the darkling arch of the night sky and grew brighter. Then, abruptly, the star of Lostris appeared above his head. He was amazed that it had left its constant position in the train of the planets. Now it hung like a guttering lantern flame above the tower of Galala. It was no longer a star. In the few short hours since he had last laid eyes upon it, it had erupted into a fiery cloud and was blowing itself apart. Dark, ominous vapours billowed around it, lit by internal fires that were consuming it in a mighty blaze that lit the heavens above his head. Taita waited and watched through the long hours of darkness. The maimed star did not move from its position high above his head. It was still there at sunrise, and the following night it appeared again in the same heavenly station. Night after night the star remained fixed in the sky like a mighty beacon whose eerie light must reach to the ends of the heavens. The clouds of destruction that enveloped it swirled and eddied. The fires flared up in its centre, then died away, only to flare again in a different place. At dawn the townsfolk came up to the ancient temple and waited for an audience with the Magus in the shade of the tall columns of the hypostyle hall. When Taita descended from his tower, they crowded around him, begging for an explanation of the mighty eruption of flames that hung over their city. "Oh, mighty Magus, does this herald another plague? Has Egypt not suffered enough? Please explain these terrible omens to us." But he could tell them nothing for their comfort. None of his studies had prepared him for anything like the unnatural behaviour of the Star of Lostris. The new moon waxed full, and its light softened the fearful image of the burning star. When it waned, the star of Lostris dominated the heavens once more, burning so brightly that all other stars paled into insignificance beside it. As if summoned by this beacon, a dark cloud of locusts came out of the south and descended on Galala. They stayed for 2 days, and devastated the irrigated fields, leaving not a single ear of Dara corn or a leaf on the olive trees. The branches of the pomegranates bent under the weight of the swarms, then broke off. On the morning of the third day, the insects rose in a vast, murmurous cloud and flew westwards towards the Nile to wreak more devastation on lands already dying from the failure of the Nile flood. The land of Egypt quailed, and the population gave in to despair.